We know that homes in the Revelstoke area have the potential to have high levels of radon in the air. Revelstoke participated last winter in a nationwide study called the 100 Test Kit Challenge. The results showed that of the 120 households that participated, 55 had levels above what Health Canada recommends is safe. Radon is an invisible, odorless, radioactive gas that occurs when certain elements break down in the soil. These include uranium and radium, of which there's an abundance in this area. Studies show that radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer in smokers and the leading cause in non-smokers. Andrew Arshinoff runs Radon Care, a company out of Calgary that installs radon mitigation systems in Revelstoke. His crew was recently in town doing some installations, and I caught up with him in a basement in a Newlands Road area home.
Let me move this out of the way so you can see it. Okay, so if you come take a look over here. So radon comes from the dirt. So because it comes from the dirt, it builds up a pressure underneath your house. And because your basement is naturally a lower air pressure than it is on the ground, your basement's always pulling on the ground to pull the radon in. So what we want to do then to mitigate it is reverse that. We want to create a lower air pressure underneath the house than we have in the home so that the path of least resistance for any gas is to come towards our mitigation system, which is going to eventually, it's not yet of course, but vent up and out the side of the house instead of coming into the basement. So here we can see we found a good spot. We drilled a hole in the concrete. We dug out a little pit, and that's our suction pit. So in order to know that we're going to deal with all of the radon, I'll show you the other side of the house. We want to make sure that the pressure that fan is applying extends to the very far corner. So if you come over here, this is a micromanometer, right? So this is showing us the pressure right now, the difference between under the concrete floor and the room that we're in. So if you watch that, I'll just go get them to turn on the fan.
Yep.
So this is just the testing part of it to try to figure out how much airflow and pressure we need to pull from under the house. When he turns on the fan, rather than seeing a positive pressure, which a positive pressure means it's positive under the ground, it's negative in the basement, so it's all coming up, that number is going to drop to a negative pressure. That shows us that any gas from under here now is going to, instead of coming up through the cracks in the concrete, it's going to get pulled towards our system. That's one of the most important parts of putting the mitigation system in. You don't just want to drill a hole in the ground and put a fan in. It's a combination of having the right amount of airflow and the right amount of pressure. If you're pulling the air through gravel under a house, that's very easy. If you're pulling it through clay, that's very, very different. So we want to make sure we size the system correctly for the house we're working in. One of the really big ones is basement smell. If you've ever been into a basement where it just kind of feels musky and humid, that humidity is coming into the basement the same way that the radon is. So when we put this system in, that pulls all of that humidity out, blows it out the side of the house. And we've had quite a few homes where we really drop the humidity in the basement so that the whole basement just feels kind of fresher.
Okay, so now you're just getting the pressure right and then you have to install a fan?
Right. So we have about 10, 12 different radon fans. And as I said, they use different amounts of power. They pull different amounts of pressure. They range from about half inch of water column to about 5.5. And they move a different amount of air. So what we're doing right now is trying to figure out which fan is the best to put on, which spot is the best point to put the mitigation system. And sometimes it's not just one hole in the slab. Sometimes we need two or three, right? Some houses, the way the concrete footings are done, there's not just a footing around the outside, there's some going through the middle. And if that's the case, when we do this pressure test, that kind of shows us what's going on underneath the ground, so that if we need to have one system at different sides of the house, or if we need to have two or three or whatever else we have to put in. So this is just a pressure testing to determine exactly the design of the system. Once we're done that, then we're just going to put it together and let it run. Actually, the one we did the other day, we needed two mitigation systems and four suction points. So it really varies, right? And that's actually one of the big things about radon. A lot of people go on YouTube, there's some guy on YouTube, and you drill one hole in the ground, you have one pipe, one fan, and you're done. Especially out in Revelstoke, unless you're dealing, and even when you're dealing with a brand new house, it's not often that straightforward. One system on one side of the house is only going to affect the pressure on a fraction of the house. You need to figure out where it's affecting that pressure and what else you need to do to extend it across, right? So sometimes the system does end up being one point, but sometimes it can be much, much more.
So I know that there's a the Ruffin code for BC 18, where all new builds have to have the pipe in place. But then I'm wondering, then it's not just a matter of putting a fan in. You still need somebody like your company to come and test to make sure that that's enough for the radon that might be there then.
Right. So as with any new code, when they first are doing it, some are done perfectly right off the hop. Some of them are done, I'll just say not perfectly, right? So when we see a radon ruffin, and a radon ruffin is supposed to be 4 inches of gravel underneath the house because that lets the airflow a lot better. And that part is very, very beneficial. And a pipe that connects under the ground, a weeping tile, to a pipe that goes up and out the roof of the house. So in theory, you have a passive system. So just having that pipe there, it has a little bit of a chimney effect. So it's always pulling a little bit on the ground, and it gives the radon another path to go out of the house rather than come in. Often those aren't enough. We've actually done two of those houses this week that already had a passive radon system in them, which is a passive system, is a system without an activation like a fan. When they were tested, the radon still ranged, I think in those two houses, between 200 and 250 in one and 700 in some in the other. So just having the system itself is not enough. When we go to activate the system, the first thing that we do is we measure it. We do the same pressure test we're doing here to see if it's working properly, see how much airflow we need, what size fan that we need. And I would say 6 times out of 10, we don't even end up using the ruffin. We find another way that could be more efficient to put the system in. One thing about radon testing, Health Canada advises you do a 3-month test before you decide to mitigate. Right. The reason for that is radon is a long-term health risk. If we measure the house today, and actually we are measuring it today, the radon's about 100 down here right now. You can have 100 on a warm day with open windows. That same house can go up to 900 or 1,000 when it gets cold. So if you are going to get a digital meter, or you're going to get something like a loaner from the library, those are great. They're very accurate most of the time. The only issue is if you measure this one day with all your windows open, you might say, hey, great, it's super low. Then minus 30 weather comes along, you close up all those windows, and your house is actually very high. Therefore, the longer you test, the better the measurement is.
How much does it cost what you're doing here today?
So for a mitigation system, they of course do vary by quite a bit. You're looking usually around the $4,000 mark to put in a mitigation system. Again, that really depends on the house, the size of the house, the mechanical that's in the house, if we need multiple systems, whatever else it might be. But to give a general ballpark, the systems usually only take a day or two to put in, but they are not $20,000 systems. Like, they're not major, major renovations. It's usually the good way to think about it, a little bit cheaper than air conditioning.
You were talking before, and we do know that Revelstoke is what they have called a radon hot zone. It's high here. And you were saying in a place like Revelstoke, just describe, because I know you generally work in Calgary and Southern Alberta. In this community here, is it levels that you don't normally see, or just talk about the difference that you see here?
So I wouldn't say it's levels we don't normally see. Most of the work we are doing, and when we're working in Calgary, the radon is, I'd say the average mitigation is around 250. Out here, it seems most of the houses we're working on are 600 to 700, so they're definitely higher. But there's a lot of hot spots in Alberta as well. There's some neighborhoods, and again, I don't like to particularly say neighborhoods, because if I say there's one neighborhood in Calgary where the radon is super high, it's a fixable problem. So you don't want to say something like that and have someone decide they don't want to buy a house in that neighborhood. You should never not buy a certain house because of radon, because it can absolutely be fixed. As one community, Revelstoke does seem to be higher than the average, but I wouldn't say it's off the charts, right? It definitely is just a bit higher, though.
And like you were saying with neighborhoods, I've heard, and I've in my research seen that one house can be quite high and the house next door can be no levels at all. So it really doesn't depend on the vicinity of the house at all.
Right. So if your neighbor's house is high, the chances of your radon test being higher are maybe a little bit higher. But just on Monday, we were doing one. The homeowner had tested their basement at 1,200, which is, of course, very high. And when I was going back and forth to the truck, the neighbor was a geologist, came out to talk to me. She had tested her house and was below 100. So, and they're side-by-side houses. So it really can vary a lot. If your neighbor tests high or low, that doesn't mean that your house is going to be high or low.
And then after you put this mitigation system into this house here, do the homeowners have to continue testing for radon?
So Health Canada recommends you test every 5 years or after any renovation done to your house. A lot of people now are getting digital meters. You can get one of these meters, you hang it on your wall, and you can see what it is every day. That's probably unnecessary, but a single-use test, like an alpha track detector, those ones are the three-month test, to do that every 5 years is always a good idea, because if something does stop with the mitigation system, if you never know what can happen, that way you know.
And how many mitigations are you doing while you're here in Revelstoke?
So this week, I think we have 7 that we're going to be doing this week. I'm not entirely sure off the top of my head. It kind of changes day by day. But we make a few trips out here. This is now one of my new favorite places to go on a road trip. It's a lot nicer than some of the places in Alberta we've driven out to. So I hope we're going to be back quite a bit.
Andrew Arshinoff owns Radon Care, a company out of Calgary. Stay tuned to the morning show on Monday when we'll hear from some scientists at the University of Calgary who are collecting toenail clippings to learn about the effects of radon exposure. It's disgusting, but interesting. On a heavy radon kick in Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling, reporting for Stoke FM. And tell me what you are currently doing now to try to understand the effects that radon exposure has on people.
So the EVIC radon team spans researchers from all different disciplines at universities across Canada. And we take what I would call a holistic approach, which is to say leveraging the resources of geology, biology, psychology, architecture, and every discipline you can think of in order to understand the sort of really complex and diverse nature of how Canadians are being exposed to radioactive radon gas in their houses. And so some of the most basic work that we do is to understand the nature of the buildings that are capturing, containing, and concentrating radon gas to extraordinary levels, second highest in the world. That means Canadian lungs are being hit with particle radiation. And so we do a lot of work, and this involves really Dustin, on understanding what happens when our lungs are hit with particle radiation, at the doses that we are seeing in the environment, how that affects our DNA and drives cells potentially towards cancer. We also take a lot of steps to understand how behavior really modifies the risk of exposure, placing some people at far higher risk than others, driven by not only their lifestyle, but also socioeconomic factors and everything else in between.
We do know, especially where I live in Revelstoke, that radon is quite high in some households. So people, it seems mm-hmm. very ephemeral, like it's invisible, you can't smell it. How does it affect us?
So the type of radiation that radon releases is called particle radiation. And when it interacts with the fundamental building blocks of our cells, known as DNA, what it does is it shreds our DNA into such a degree that it's really hard for our cells to put that DNA back together properly. And it predisposes our cells to forming mutations, and mutations are the basis of which cancer is formed. And so when we are exposed to alpha particle radiation from radon on a continual repetitive basis, what ends up happening is that we are accruing these mutations in our bodies, which then will heighten our chance of developing lung cancer. And we're seeing about 1 in 5 individuals, according to Health Canada, are developing never smoker lung cancer, of those are diagnosed with lung cancer. In terms of what I'm doing in the lab to understand this, is I work with human cells and we expose them to alpha particle radiation. And I look at what are the factors in our cells that repair this type of damage or attempt to, and how do they work together when this unique, almost alien form of damage is induced in our DNA And essentially, what are the outcomes to that? Do the cells survive? How well do they survive? And are they more predisposed to forming different types of mutations?
I'm wondering if radon exposure is something, I mean, you use the word radar, but how long has it been on our radar for? Because this isn't something that we used to hear about. So is it getting worse, or is it something that we are getting more aware of now?
Yeah, I'll answer that one. So radon was only discovered as a problem in residential houses in the mid-1980s. Before that, we knew it was a serious issue in the context of mines. And it was only, in fact, discovered as an element altogether in the very late 1900s. Why has Canada not really heard about this until recent times? Well, Health Canada actually has been trying to tell Canadians about this for the better part of 20 years. But because it falls under provincial jurisdiction as a natural thing that comes from the ground, it makes it really complicated to legislate. For example, Health Canada could legislate that your water bottle doesn't have to contain certain harmful chemicals and remove those from shelves tomorrow, but they can't really do anything about radon because it falls to the provinces. And so we have a bit of a patchwork in Canada as it relates to radon-related regulation, of which there is, in fact, very little, and guidance, of which there is quite a lot. So what are some of the things that have precluded that awareness? Is it really because it falls to individuals to test for their own properties and fit to defy? It just makes it a struggle in order to get that message out, and it has been underfunded. With respect to the question, is it getting worse? It absolutely is. And in fact, we published a study late last year that demonstrated Canadian radon exposure, whilst quite bad already at the turn of World War II, has gotten enormously worse over time, such that today a house has a 1 in 3 risk of exceeding the maximum tolerated exposure threshold for Canada, which is 200 becquerels. That was already high, as you say, in 1940, it was around 1 in 10, but now it's 1 in 3. So newer houses have higher radon.
And I'm wondering, in areas where radon is known to be higher, are we seeing corresponding rates of increase of lung cancer? Because I do understand there is a strip of uranium that runs diagonally through British Columbia, but British Columbia at the same time has really low rates of lung cancer. So I'm wondering what you can say about that.
The key point here is you can't look at that within Canada because we don't have enough population to look at those differences, but you can absolutely look at that at a national scale. So if you look at the smoking rates between two countries, Canada and Sweden, they're essentially the same at about 11 to 12%. However, radon in Canada is 467% higher than it is in Sweden. Lung cancer rates here are enormously higher than they are in Sweden. And I'm talking about cases and mortality. So what is the difference? It's not smoking. One of the leading theories that it is radon. And so that's at a national scale that we can see. Canada has, and this was in the Canadian Cancer Society report a couple of years ago, amongst the highest lung cancer incidences and mortality in the world. And you better believe we do not have the highest smoking or air pollution rates, but we are second highest for radon. Now, within Canada, you can see some minor differences in the rates of never smoker lung cancer. Now, you spoke to the fact that BC has lower rates of lung cancer. That might be true, but what it has is amongst the highest rates of never smoker lung cancer, with the statistic that Dustin gave out before of what we typically find is about 1 in 5 lung cancer patients has never smoked. That's true throughout the prairies, but in British Columbia, it's actually 1 in 3. And that speaks to other nuances and differences within areas across Canada. But I think the main message is Canada does have a very serious never smoker lung cancer problem.
Mm. And actually, if I were to add to that, when you look at our data on a national level, 1 in 5 homes in Canada exceed Health Canada's recommended exposure limit of 200 becquerels for radon. But I took some time and I looked at the numbers for interior BC, and we're seeing about 24% or 1 in 4 homes are above Health Canada's recommended exposure limit of 200. just to add to that.
You mentioned that Canada has the second highest known rate of radon in the world. If I got that right, what I'm just curious to know what country is higher.
Poland.
Poland.
Okay.
By a tiny margin.
And
this is not a race anyone wanted to win. I mean,
No.
Anyone in the top five, really, it's just enormously high, yeah.
And it does have to do with uranium breaking down in the soil. Do I have that right?
Three minerals. Uranium, thorium, and radium. There's so much radium, which is the actual direct parent mineral for radon, is extremely abundant in the soils around here. I mean, you know, you've heard of radium hot springs. Well, there's a reason they named it that.
I'm wondering, because you were talking about the jurisdictional issues with Health Canada trying to raise the alarm, but then it being coming down to provincial and territorial regulations. What work are you doing with Evict Radon to try to fill in those gaps?
A few key points that we've been successful at, and medium successful at, and not successful at. So let's speak to the one that we were and weren't successful at. So, for example, in Alberta, we worked together with legislators back in 2017, 2018, and managed to actually get an Alberta Radon Awareness Act passed in legislature. That was called Bill 209. It is now called the Alberta Radon Awareness and Testing Act. And that would have legislated, for example, all daycares to have tested their buildings, which often are in converted houses, test for radon and if high, mitigate within a year. Unfortunately, that bill, although it received royal assent, has never been proclaimed and has sat on a shelf. So that was a win and a not win. A win and a win was, for example, us working with real estate regulators in both Alberta and then later in British Columbia to get all real estate professionals to be licensed. They had to pass a education course on radon. And so now what we are seeing is that our real estate professionals, an army of people who talk to this population about houses, are very well informed about radon gas and are able to advocate for testing in that particular space and to do so appropriately, which is to say a long-term test either before or after you sell a house, but not necessarily during this transaction itself. Finally, what we're doing right now on a national scale is working with Codes Canada with regards to the next building code, so the 2025 building code, in order to lobby, get the information that they need to support putting in full passive stack radon mitigation devices in basically all new Canadian builds, recognizing the fact that we have found that there isn't a single area of Canada that doesn't have a radon problem, and that our newer houses, regardless of what type they are, whether it's a single-family detached, a row house, semi-detached, duplex, you name it, they all have amongst the most high and unprecedented levels of radon.
And just to confirm and clarify, it's what I heard from the radon mitigation specialist that I spoke with last week that I think you're familiar with, Dr. Pearson, Andrew Arshinoff. But he was saying because houses are built so much more environmentally friendly and securely these days, that contributes to radon being more of a risk in them because they're so airtight. Can you confirm that?
Well, that's our current working hypothesis, is that essentially as we've built our homes more airtight, what we've failed to have implement a ventilation system as well.
That is an important point, but we also need to recognize that is Canada specific.
Yeah.
We looked and analyzed properties throughout Sweden. You better believe the Swedes have built amongst the most energy efficient houses on this planet. And a new Swedish house has amongst the lowest radon levels achievable, and they don't have a radon mitigation device in.
Correct.
What we know is that energy efficiency is not necessarily the reason we have higher radon, but rather it is the way we have implemented air tightness in Canada, coupled with the way we are heating our houses, that is likely the major reason we have such a radon problem as we do today.
Just the one stat that was in our paper, and is that the newest homes that are built in Sweden are 467% lower in radon compared to the newest homes that are being built in Canada. And so there's a huge difference, huge discrepancy in terms of the minor differences in the way that we are building our homes.
That statistic is even more striking if you consider that a house built in 1980 in Canada and Sweden had the same overall risk for radon, and a house built in 1950 in Sweden had a much higher risk for radon than in Canada. The Swedes have effectively engineered out their radon problem through changes to their build code that actually had nothing to do with directly with radon, rather looking at other things, where Canada's has made, if anything, it's gotten worse over time.
And you mentioned that has to do with how the houses are built and how they're heated. Can you go into a little bit more specifics if you know what's being done in Canada? Like, how are we heating differently and how are we building differently that makes it more risk of exposure?
We have to be careful here. Sure, we have to be careful here because we don't really know yet exactly why. We know it's happened. And we know that there are now differences in the way Canada and Sweden heats the majority of their property. So in Canada, as you probably know, in the West, in most of central Canada, you're seeing a lot of forced air ventilation. You also see a lot of gas-fired central heating. In the East, you'll see a lot more baseboard heaters and radiant heating with oil-fired central heating. A minority have also, in addition to that, some wood-burning fireplaces or gas-burning fireplaces to complement that. Now, that used to essentially be exactly the same in Sweden. But over from basically about 1980 to today, so over the course of 40 years, they have systematically removed most of their natural gas-fired forced air ventilation. And in fact, now the majority of Swedish properties are heated through a process called district heating, where there's one centralized, basically think of it as a little power plant, but it's a heating plant for an area that would distribute superheated steam or water through a piping system to every property that requires heating in that area. And then most of it comes up through a unique type of foundation called a Swedish plate, which then uses baseboard radiant heating, in-floor radiant heating, to heat that property. Very, very different air dynamics within the house are predicted when you compare that to your typical Canadian forced air ventilated house, where you have a little sort of furnace engine in the basement that takes in fresh air, superheats that, and then spreads that air from the basement level all throughout the rest of the house. You can imagine there's big differences there. Now, again, that is our theory as the main difference between the two. We don't absolutely know that that's fundamentally the reason, but that's our best working theory as of this time.
And to be clear, the potential for radiation exposure is the same in Sweden as it is in Canada?
Exactly. In 1950, Canadian houses actually had less radon in them per capita than a Swedish house. By 1980, our radon levels in new builds was the same geologically and climatically. We are very comparable. We worked together with geoscientists, and they confirmed, the overall radon potential of the soils in Sweden is basically the same as Canada. They have mountains. We have mountains. It snows a lot of the year there. It snows a lot of the year here. So the patterns between the two countries are very similar in terms of the amount of winter heating months, the summer cooling months, and the overall patterns of the topography. And of course, the radon in the ground has not changed. I mean, that takes millions of years to change the composition of radium and thorium and uranium in the soil. What has changed in the past 40 years is the way we build houses on top of that.
You mentioned in your first answer, Aaron, about something about behavior contributing to risk of exposure. I was wondering if you could just expand on that a little bit more.
Sure. We actually have two studies. One is already released last year. The other one will be released in a few weeks' time. That is work we did together with Dr. Linda Carlson of the University of Calgary. She is a sort of behavioral psychologist, particularly in the space of sort of cancer survivorship. And our team worked together with Linda to basically examine how people are getting their radon information, how they're processing that, how they might react to a radon test, and then make decisions based upon that information. And so without going through all the details of those studies, I think some of the key messages that will come out in the one that should be released in a few weeks' time is that behavior, the amount of time, for example, you might take from moving into a house to first getting a radon test, how many times you need to hear about radon before you might get a test, for example. Say you've got a test, how long it takes you to deploy it. When you got the outcome of the test, whether or not you can quickly take that action forward to, say, reduce your radon, whether you can afford to do so. All of those work together to really stratify Canadians across groups where their actual exposure in the house is completely different, and that's entirely as a function of behavior. So two extreme examples I'll give you that is borne out in our data. So young couple moves into a house. Typically what we see there is that the partner identifying as a woman will hear about radon 1 to 3 times. She will get a radon test fairly quickly, perform that fairly quickly. They'll get a result back. If that's a scenario where it's high, 1/3 of them are likely to mitigate fairly quickly, reduce their risk to next to nothing. 1/3 will not be able to afford to do so, but will want to. And 1/3, for whatever reason, will decline the action or just procrastinate for a long period of time. That those latter two groups, those that want to but can't afford to, and those that just delay action or decline action, go on to be some of the most highly exposed people around. Now, contrast that same scenario with a couple who move into a house, but they live there, say, 20 years before they get a radon test, and then go on, do that, find that they also have had high radon, and go on and same scenario. They either fix it, they can't afford to, or they decline the action. Those scenarios bear out two very different pictures of radiation exposure, depending on whether they fix it or not. And all of that is entirely driven by our behavior, which actually means the amount of absorbed radiation to the lungs from the radon in the house. Because it's not just the radon in the house that matters. It's how long you're spending in that house at that level.
I'm wondering if you have any data that shows if you live in a house with a high radon, what are the chances that you'll get lung cancer?
Yeah, so that's been done with population health studies, large studies that came out in 2005, one in North America, one in Europe, and one in China, that actually studied tens of thousands of lung cancer patients coupled with tens of thousands of healthy controls. And so what we know is that your relative risk of lung cancer goes up by about 16%, 1/6, for every 100 becquerels of radon that you absorb that you are living in over the long term. So, for example, we see houses all the time across BC in the interior and the prairies of 1,000 becquerels. They're going to be adding 160% to their lifetime risk of lung cancer.
Wow. And Andrew Arshinoff mentioned when we were chatting last week and this is why I wanted to call, because he was talking about how you're collecting toenail clippings. I was wondering, and I think Ali mentioned that you're in the early stages of this study, but I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about what you're looking at there.
Sure. So the first thing to note, this is a study in a pilot project phase, funded by the Canadian Cancer Society, as well as the Canadian Institutes for Health Research. What we are doing at this time is exploring the feasibility of using trace radon decay elements. So when you absorb radon, it actually emits radiation and precipitates inside our bodies as solid radioactive polonium. That solid radioactive polonium, within the course of a few minutes, goes on to decay into solid radioactive lead. Now, that is retained in our bodies for a very long time and continues to emit radiation very, very slowly over the course of decades, that still has an effect, but will accumulate. And what we're exploring is whether we can actually measure the amount of radon decay products in our tissues. And then specifically, we're using toenails because we believe, based upon really old data from the mid-20th century, that demonstrated these radon decay products will accumulate in what's called keratinizing tissue. That means your hair, your nails, and your skin. But toenails is, of course, something we all have. We all throw away at least probably once a month. They typically don't see daylight that much, not that that really matters, and are fairly easy to collect from people, certainly easier to store and collect versus, say, blood. And so we're using that in order to determine whether we can use it as a readout potentially for someone's lifetime radon exposure. In order to do that, the pilot project phase is using 75 people from the Evict Radon study. So they have to be in the study already, because we really do need to know their long-term radon exposure already in the pilot project in order to see if we can see any relationship between that and the amount of these radon decay products we might find in their toenails. And so we're looking at folks with known long low exposure, known long very high exposure, and known short but very high exposure. The outcomes of that study are not available at this time, but we're hoping would be available by the end of this year as the data comes off. So that the research production line, if that makes sense. If successful, we are hoping to move forward with a second early phase project involving more people, but that would require us to win funding in order to do that. To be eligible for second phase of the study, I believe at this time we would be looking at people still also enrolled in the Evict Radon study, so we would have some known radon exposures there. But we may also work together with the Tomorrow Project, so the Canadian Partnership for Tomorrow Projects across Canada. But that remains to be determined at this time.
So just to make sure that I have it right, there are people in an Evict Radon study and they have the different known levels of exposure that you just spelled out for me, and those are the people who you'll be collecting the toenails clippings from.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. In order to be eligible for inclusion in this study, we had to know long-term radon exposure. That's the only way we're going to be able to go forward to a different technology. You have to start with where you're at right now to move forward to the different technology. Otherwise, it would be entirely guesswork. And so we have in the Evict Radon cohort right now over 30,000 Canadian households, of which we invited a subset for whom we knew their long-term exposure. And by long-term, I mean at least a decade was either very low, very high, or we had another group that we knew very high exposure for a shorter period of time. And we're comparing only 25 people in each category. We collected already their toenails. That happened earlier this year. And are now in the analysis phase of those toenails.
And what do you think, what are you predicting that you'll be able to learn from them?
So the theory, the hypothesis, is that those with very high long-term radon exposure will have a higher amount of these radon decay products, so things like radioactive lead, in their toenails, and that the amount of that should be proportional to their lifetime radon exposure. We don't know that that's going to be the case, but that is the hypothesis at this time.
Right, that makes sense. I don't think I have any more questions. It's very, very interesting and a little bit disturbing, but is there anything else that you guys are working on or that I missed and you think that people should know?
If I could add one thing in, is that you mentioned that you feel it's very disturbing. And I think there's a positive side to this, in that although it's prevalent within Canada, radon's a fixable issue. We have the technology, we've studied it. Basically, what you need to do first is you need to test your home. You need to determine what your level of radon is in your house. And then if it's high and you choose to mitigate, it's a proven technology that will reduce those levels, if done by a certified technician, to safe levels. And so I think that's, although it's scary, it's fixable, and we can prevent these never smoker lung cancer cases just by testing our homes.
And reducing it if it's high.
And reducing it if it's high.
Which goes then to another important point. It's never too late to test for radon. The Evict Radon study remains open to all Canadians if they wish to test in a nonprofit manner that also enables research like we're doing. So, for example, we wouldn't be able to do the behavioral work, the cross-country comparisons of radon in Canada, Sweden, or this new technology piloting work without Canadians signing up as citizen scientists within the Evict Radon study. So if they want to learn more about that, they can visit evictradon.org at any time. You can get a test at any time of year deployed in your house. And those readings will go on. You'll consent to share those in a de-identified way with researchers like ourselves, as I say, based throughout Canada. So they come centrally, and the teams are currently based at University of Calgary, University of British Columbia, University of Victoria, University of Saskatchewan, University of Dalhousie, U of T. We've got people there, and Laval in Quebec. We are all over Canada. Oh, I forgot to mention Yukon. We're also in Yukon. And so we have researchers working on various aspects of this throughout Canada. So this is really Canada's national radon study. And if people want to sign up for that, they're welcome to do so. The last point that I always like to make when people ask me, what's one thing that you should mention that we haven't talked about, is that you're never too young to test for radon. What we found is that the younger you are when you test and eliminate radon from your life, the lowest possible exposures you will achieve. We know that kids and babies are amongst the most susceptible to the negative health consequences of radiation in general, and indeed radon in particular. So if you're young and you're having a young family, you absolutely should test whatever building you're in, living, for radon as fast as you can, and try and reduce that as much as you can, recognizing the fact that we know, unfortunately, one third of people who tend to be even younger will struggle financially to do so. And that is something that we're dealing with as a society. But however, I recently learned of a variety of initiatives across Canada, not necessarily in all provinces, but in most provinces, that provide subsidies for younger folks. I should say not younger, I should say folks of lower income to help support the costs of radon mitigation, because it is really important to eliminate from your life as early as you can.
And just to add a personal side to that, I just moved into a new house myself. I have three boys, and the first thing I did when I moved into that house was I put a radon detector in, because I want them to be safe.